You're listening to the Starving Artists Blog Podcast, dedicated to helping artists like you do what you love and get paid for it. Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of the podcast.
Episode 7 of the Starving Artist Blog Podcast. We made it. I can't believe it's been 7 episodes.
Yeah, I can't believe it's really gone by quickly.
Unreal. Thank you all for tuning in. My name is Mark Toland.
And I'm Stephanie Toland.
And together we are the co-creators of StarvingArtistsBlog.com, which is a blog and podcast dedicated to helping artists like you do what you love and get paid for it. And we're here today to talk about all things art. So, hello, Stephanie. It's great to sit down with you and finally see you.
Finally, I haven't seen you in a while. Yeah, we've both been...
I was in Los Angeles and you've been in class and we stay very busy, but doing things we enjoy for the most part. So this podcast is kind of like catch up and also a chance to inspire at the same time.
Right.
You were just telling me before we went on something interesting, and that is that this is episode 7, but also...
week 7 of school. So we pretty much started this... this project the same week that I started my second semester of grad school, which I don't know if good idea or bad idea. I'm kind of glad that we got started without me knowing how busy I was going to be, or else we might have pushed it back.
Right. And also that's kind of goes hand in hand with an arts career. There's never going to be the perfect time to start something.
Right. Sometimes you just have to do it and force yourself to make the time for it every week, because I sure wouldn't want to take on something new right now while I'm in the middle of school.
Right, now that you know.
Yeah, now that I know what I'm in for. So, and midterms are next week. Halfway done. So
halfway done.
Midterms. Not halfway done with the podcast, though.
No. Yeah, we hope to keep this going for a very, very long time. What's on the horizon? Let's see. We have a New York trip coming up.
Yeah. We're both really excited about that.
That's so exciting. And you got some new photography gear, which we're going to take with us.
I did. That's very exciting. And
Stephanie's pretty much obsessed.
Yeah,
so,
I'm a little obsessed, and it's been quite distracting. Not so much interested in writing, my law papers, and a lot more interested in, dreaming up
New photography ideas.
Yeah,
we're not looking at Broadway shows when we go. We're looking for good photo ops and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's going to be such an exciting trip.
But yeah, and I'm honestly a little groggy from daylight saving happening, and I'm still not quite. I don't know what. It's only an hour, but it has sort of screwed my week up a little.
I had to teach myself how to reset the stove clock and the car clock and all that nonsense. So you only do it the once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just got back from LA. I did a big show out there. That was a kind of whirlwind trip. But it's so weird to go. I could see my breath in that morning in Chicago, and then get there and go for a jog outside in shorts and sunny weather. We just need it to be summer here already.
Yeah, it's there's about the time when you live in some a cold place like Chicago or a lot of cities in the U.S. But
we have cabin fever.
Yeah, where you just, your mind sort of starts to
I told you just the other day, because we love taking photos, but I was like, I can go out and find a cool building or something neat, but I'm just tired of the blah gray and browns. Yeah. I need the green. I need the bright blue again, because I need to feel reinvigorated and have something new to look at.
Even moody artists need some sunshine every now and then to kind of wake you up from the
fog of
winter. So hopefully a little vacation and hopefully some sunshine.
Spring-like
weather. I mean, it's like 50 today, and we're practically wanting to throw on tank tops and flip flops.
We're about a week from spring, so hopefully it's coming up, and we'll have a whole different kind of way to be inspired, because we'll be outside more and enjoying the 2 months of summer in Chicago. Stephanie, you have this awesome. Well, I wouldn't say awesome necessarily, but this interesting project, and I know it's been kind of something you've been dreading. But it's so applicable to so many things we've been talking about and talk about. Give me and the listeners just a run, like bullet points of what the point of the project is.
So the point of this project, this is for my managing and licensing intellectual property class. Real enthralling. But so the prompt for the assignment, basically for my final, is I have these three sort of objectives that I, these three questions that I need to get answered. And they are basically things like, I'm representing an artist and I want to get their song in medium rotation on this radio station. Who do I contact? And then I have to contact that person, ask them the question, and go through this whole thing. And so the, it ranges from like getting a song on a radio station to getting my band to play at like Coachella or even how to get your video featured on a YouTube like homepage feature or whatever.
Right.
So I have to seek out the person who has the proper like job title for this thing. Okay. And then I have to get their contact information, call them, email them, however, you know, whatever form works, and get them to respond and answer a list of questions. You know, and these are busy, busy people who, you know, don't have a ton of free time to just be, you know, giving away their secrets and their information. And so, but that's the assignment. And I have been dreading it because I hate the idea of like talking on the phone. And I also don't like the pressure of like the pressure was put on us that if we don't make successful contact and get our questions answered, that we do not, like, we have failed at the assignment, which I think is just to put pressure on us partly because, you know, people might not be successful fully, right. But, you know, the goal is to try as hard as you can over the course of, you know, and we have like 8, 9, 10 weeks to accomplish it. So, so that's the goal. And it's really been giving me like, I really have hated the idea of this assignment.
Well, I mean, it's a little ridiculous. Like, we've talked a lot about this, clearly just you and me, but not on the podcast. The ridiculous part of it is how it doesn't really apply to your field. And it's kind of like right, in a right. 2-year program, when are you going to start doing things that that apply to your, right. your field?
So, yeah, all of the prompts are around the music industry, right. to be clear. And they're not – and the idea of having to contact somebody and get some questions answered, that's great. But I am never going to probably represent an artist in a band and need right. to be a part of like the digital music industry or anything like that.
Right.
So
that's what I was going to say though, that the good, like that's the con of it is that it's not really in your field. The pro of it is that, yeah, you might have to try to seek someone in a position of power one day and get answers. And it's kind of throwing you into that situation, right. which I understand. I showed you, and it's if any of the listeners aren't familiar, it's a great book to check out. It's The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and he's got some great kind of exercises and challenges.
Yeah, yeah.
And he talks about how you can get past the gatekeeper and talk to a hero or someone, a leader out there or something, and he kind of challenges you
reach out to three people or three days in a row, reach out to one of your heroes or something. And he kind of gives you a prompt that you can follow that he's been successful using to get through to somebody to ask them a couple of questions. And
right. So it's, it's an interesting idea.
I see the benefit of it, but I also feel like I'm like you said, it's not really like if it were, you know, I don't know. We talked. I said if it was something more applicable to what I'm doing now, so reaching out to a cruise ship agent or something,
an entertainment company
to have Mark Tolan put on the roster, that would be more interesting to me. So I'm always kind of stuck with the school assignments that I'm doing, where they're really I could apply them to our business and to what we're doing, but I'm having to do these hypothetical situations instead of doing the actual work. So in finance class, I'm doing the books for a hypothetical pretend company,
mm-hmm.
while yeah. all the while our books are sort of waiting for me to have the time to look at them.
Right.
So there's, I'm constantly juggling this like,
right. So you knew about this assignment, what, almost pretty much the first week or towards the start
about,
of the semester?
About 3 or 4 weeks ago.
And okay, then, so it's been a month, and you've talked to me about this every day, every other day. It's been like this excruciating.
Yes.
Because to you as an introvert, like we talked about a few episodes ago, there's just certain things that you don't favor as much as others, you know?
Sure, sure.
And talking on the phone is one of those things. And then last night, you were like, crap, it's midterms. I've got to do something. And so what happened?
So we had an update. And I think the thing that bothers me most about it is not necessarily reaching out to somebody, but having the parameters that I do, having to ask the specific questions that I've been told I have to ask in the manner that they want me to ask them and with a time constraint. I don't do well with those kinds of boundaries, I guess, like to that structured of a framework. It immediately makes me not want to do something when I have like, you have to do this way by this time. Boom, here's your deadline. Like, right. I just don't work like that. So we have these check-in points. And tonight is the first check-in. And we're supposed to have this activity log where we write down the date that we've contacted, the time, the person, if our contact was successful, if we were whatever. So I hope my teacher's not listening, but I like faked a couple, like I pretended. I hope he doesn't like tune in. But I faked a couple and was like, well, I did this. And then I wrote some real stuff. And then I was like, okay. And I found this guy's contact information. He was the perfect person to contact. And so I was like, well, I'll send one last email, like an actual email out to this person in time to report it in my activity log for my class tomorrow night.
Right.
So I did it. He's the first person I reached out to for this entire assignment. I've been worried about it for weeks. And 20 minutes later, he responded to me.
Which is amazing.
And immediately I was just like, oh.
A weight is lifted.
A weight has been lifted off of me. And it wasn't nearly as big of a deal as I've been building it up in my mind over the last several weeks.
Which is everything.
Which
artist,
is life.
Entrepreneur, yeah. Life, whatever. You get this idea of how challenging something is or how difficult it's going to be. But I said this to you last night, and we talk about this all the time. The hardest part of anything is just getting started. It's just taking that first step and just doing something. And finally, last night, you just put this plan into action, which I don't know if you've been faking it necessarily. You've been working and finding people.
Yeah, I've been like researching, but it's been a very passive.
Right, right. So
very passive. And I've been like, oh, this isn't going to work. And sort of pessimistic outlook on it. Like, who's going to respond to me? I'm just a grad student trying to get some questions answered. Like, they don't have time for this.
Right.
And then I found this guy and I thought he looked like he was somebody who was in the position that could answer my questions, but also seemed, you know, his website said, if you want to contact me and ask me more about what I do, email me at blah, blah, blah. And I thought, okay, so he's open to this. He wants to talk about what he does to an extent. And I got a response. So
right.
I sent back, I rushed to compile my list of questions that I needed answered. And I kind of consolidated them down to what I thought would, you know, not something too long that would take him too long to respond to. So I may knock this final out of the park before midterms even happens.
Before we go to New York.
So all my classmates will be super jealous because they've been dreading this assignment also.
I just want to say that you, this is like you with a lot of things. Like you're saying you faked it, but I don't think you really faked it. You say like you don't understand something and then you knock an assignment out of the park because you usually comprehend more than you think and do more. And I'm also saying that just in case your teacher's listening to defend you for that. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. If he's listening, extra credit, because this should be in the activity log.
It's true. It's true.
Maybe that's why we're doing it, just for an extra thing. I podcasted about it, threw it out into the ether, just in case someone in a position of power is listening. Anyway, I love that. I love that you dreaded it for so long, did it, and once you got it going, something happened.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, I feel like immediately, and I do this to myself a lot. I worry a lot about whether or not I have enough experience or enough knowledge or I'm executing something properly, and I worry. And then it never ends up being as big of a deal as I've built up into my head that it's going to be. Like,
right.
And I think that And I've started to get better at that, at sort of like realizing that things like sometimes they just don't matter as much as I'm put as,
right.
And it's easier to just sort of lift that weight off of yourself. And then you actually kind of perform better. But this project, I totally reverted back to like hating the idea of it. And then, but then as soon as I got that response, I was like, I felt like I was on top of the world. I was like, who else can I email? Like, what else can I find out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me more.
It's like, never that big of a deal. It's, yeah.
So,
it's nuts.
So we'll see. Hopefully he'll get back to me and answer all my questions and yeah, we'll go from there.
It's really cool. It was really cool that he got back so quickly. I'm kind of struggling with that too. Right now, we should probably say, I flew one of my best friends and he's probably one of the best magicians I've ever seen. He lives in Texas. His name is Frank Fogg. And I flew him up here for a couple weeks because I'm working on a new show. Stephanie's going to help me film it this summer, and we're going to use that tape to get more work and all these other things. And he got up here just a couple days ago, and we've been working on the show. And he leaves just a couple days before we head to New York. So we've kind of got this window of time to work on this and nail down some new ideas.
You're trying to write an entire show and a new show in 2 weeks.
Yeah, at least get the framework, and then I'm going to send him, you know, the rest of it through email and finish it up by summertime, and I think that'll be good. But it is so scary because, at least in my field, I have all this, it's kind of like stock material or tried and tested like classics of magic or mentalism. Right. It's pieces that I've been doing for years that I know that I'm so confident in. I can do them in my sleep. I know they work. It's very hard to test something in my field without an audience. Right. And so, you know, I've been struggling the past few days as we've been working on this because I have an idea and then I scrap it, either because I've seen someone else do it and I don't want to copy, or because I don't have the confidence in whatever that material is. I don't have, like, it's so hard for me to have confidence in my own material for some reason, and to think it's going to be good, you know?
Yeah.
But I think if you, and this is what I've been trying to tell myself, I guess maybe I've just been trying to trick myself into working hard. But if you don't have that confidence, then you never take that next step. It's confidence in allowing yourself to take risks and push your boundaries so you can, you know, you can open yourself up creatively and artistically and all those things.
Right. Yeah, because you need to take risks. I don't know. I feel like it's normal as an artist that you go through stages of I'm seeking a good idea and then sort of having a breakthrough where you're like, this is the greatest idea. This is amazing. And then you sort of work on that idea for a while and then you hate it and then you want to throw it away and then you work on it some more and you get either talk yourself into it or other people talk you into keeping the idea, and then you do it and then it's not quite as good as you hoped it would be. Like, I feel like that's the evolution of the artist, right? That's
right.
Of any work, you look at someone else's work and you're like, oh, I love that. And I love this. And I love that. And then, this reminds me of this photograph that I took, and it got, it was just an Instagram photo. But it sort of like took off and was shared a bunch, and you said you really liked it, and everyone was like, this is amazing. But to me, I was looking at it, I was like, I don't get like what's amazing about it. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the wall. It's a blizzard. What's amazing about it, you took it down the alley behind our building, but you mm-hmm. can't tell it's an alley because it that was probably the biggest blizzard day we had.
The snow was, and it was, I took a picture because the snow looked almost like down this alley, with the wind, it looked like sort of a tornado of snowflakes. So there's this big flurry and it's icy blue and cold, and it was so cold and windy, and people really liked it. But when I look at it, I like the photo, but I sort of am underwhelmed by my vision, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like that's just an artist kind of.
Yeah.
Like sometimes
you never
you can't,
think your
yeah,
ideas
you never
are...
think you, there's always room for improvement. There's right. always like, it's not as good as I hoped it would be. You
right.
know?
I never think my ideas are as good as someone else's ideas. I think a good thing of being an artist is to always be trying to improve and get better. But it's a hard thing to have confidence in your own ideas, especially in my field, because people like publish books and things. And so there's magic creators and magic performers, and performers like I have like a consultant come up and help me right now. So I'm going to be performing some stuff he's come up with and other things, which is absolutely fine. But if I have an idea and I really stand behind it, the more I'm in here pacing or sitting and talking about it, the more I just want to scrap the whole thing and use someone else. Cause it does, you know, I just think my ideas are terrible. Right. And if I published and someone was out there performing them, that would blow my mind. Cause in my head, they aren't that good, you know?
Yeah.
But hopefully.
And I think there's also, there's a balance between, like, I know that you, you watch and you study and you read a lot about what you do. And there's almost a point where you need to be informed about what's out there and what people are doing and be inspired. But at the same time, you need to like cut off your sort of that world for a while so that you can be a creator. So
sure.
Because the someone else's artistic voice might be copied too much in the new material, but at the same time, you need to be cognizant of what's out there so that you aren't creating and then come to realize like, oh, right. I can't publish this because.
Right. Yeah. That's, it's a fine line. Cause I like to, nothing worse than talking to someone who is, you know, who works in a field. I know people in my field who are full-time pros, I guess they would call themselves, but then they don't know the history of it. They don't know what's happening in it. They don't know the news. They don't know someone's name who's performing. And it's, to me, it's like you should know those things. But then, like you said, there's a certain point you got to get to where you kind of close yourself off to that.
Right.
So you don't know too much.
Right. And I think that's it could prohibit you. You study your craft so much because you just enjoy reading about it and watching it and knowing what's going on. But I think that has been a hindrance for you when creating new things because you scrap ideas before they're fully formed just because you know that somebody and you have a memory like it's amazing. So you scrap your ideas before they're fully formed because you know that somebody else has already done something similar. But if you close yourself off to, you know, letting these ideas sort of evolve, then, you know, like nothing's new, nothing's original. Right. Everything is, you know, like, of course, there's going to be someone out there who has independently created at some point in time something that is similar or a lot like what you're creating. So I think you have to balance the line between sort of an obliviousness so that you can just create, but having your history, knowing what's going on, being inspired by others,
right?
All of that. It's a fine line.
There another fine line, since you say that, and it's, you know, it's something we both struggle with, is that we, Frank and I, that's the we I'm talking about, basically we came up with the show in the first 2 days he was here.
Right.
And we had a good framework of it, and we thought it was good, and then I wanted you to sit down and hear it, and I could tell as we were telling you that it wasn't quite right. And I don't think it's because it was a bad show. I think it was because it wasn't the right show at this time. And that's what we hit on when we were explaining to you. And the fine line I'm talking about is that you want to be artistic, you want to be original, and you want to say something, but you also have to eat. You have to make it commercial enough that people will care without selling your soul, you know, if you're an artist. And there's that fine line you want to walk down. I want to do material I'm proud of, but I also can't, like, this show we had was so grandiose and amazing, but I don't know. I looked on my calendar and that was the main thing. I was like, I don't know where I'm going to perform that show for a long while. So it's in the notebook and hopefully I get to do it one day at like a fringe festival or something. Cause it's a really good show, but I don't think I could walk into a corporate event, a college and do it just because people don't have the mental capacity in those venues to want to pay attention to something so cerebral, something so, you know, thought provoking.
So
we kind of had to scrap the skeleton of the show and keep some of the pieces we liked. And then we're like reordering. And I hated to do that to Frank because he had gears spinning. But the biggest test for me is you, because you come at it from a different perspective, even though you know how a lot of things work. And if it doesn't work for your audience, for your clientele, your demographic, then it's just not right.
Yeah.
And I don't know when, I don't know honestly when I'll get to do that show 100 times, but the show we're doing now that we've done for the, so Frank's been here 4 days, I guess. So the past 2 days now, the one we're probably a third of the way finished with, it's way better. It's going to be even more like what we had envisioned, but it took us, you know, 6 other shows, one kind of full thing, and then getting rid of all those to get to this point. And who knows what we'll have a week and a half from now when Frank has to leave. But that's so difficult to me. If I had it my way, I'd create the art I want. People would come to see it, and we'd have all the money we need.
Yeah, they'd pay good money to see it, yeah.
But that's just not how it goes.
That's the hard thing, right? That's the hard thing. It would be, you know, artists and non-artists alike would love to just be able to do whatever they want and get paid for it. That'd be really
right. Right, but the truth is a career in the arts, that's not how it works.
Right.
And it's a real bummer. It's a real bummer that you can't just create art like that. I remember in college when we were dating, and I was in a rough patch because like my dad had passed away and all these things, and like all the rest of college was really like a frustrating time for me, and there were a lot of circumstances surrounding all that, but I was frustrated with the program I was in college. I was just like not in a good place, like in a lot of things. I was broke, all these things. But we were dating, and I was trying. So I was telling you all my ideas and trying to be like so artistic about it. And then I went out to LA and was sleeping on couches. I never did any of those ideas I told you in my notebook. I was doing flashy stuff because it's like people aren't gonna pay you to make them, to challenge them intellectually. You have to rise the ranks to the top, and then they'll listen to you. You know, like
right.
I have to just go and do an entertaining show.
You know, and I think some artists can get away. Like some artists can get away with just doing their really, really bizarre fine art, and they sell it, and it's amazing, and they get to do it, and good for them. That's awesome.
Sure.
But for the most part, I would say,
for us mere mortals. We have to worry about
who don't have the combination of talent, right audience, right time, right circumstances, right art, you know.
Yeah.
For the rest of us, we're commissioned to do things. We are hired to perform in venues specifically needing certain things. So we have to adapt what we do to fit. And, you know, I think that in college we both sort of started with this idea that of what we didn't like, what we didn't want, and we really boxed ourselves in with these high ideals about what kind of art we wanted to do.
Right.
And as we've gotten older, those sort of restraints have lifted slightly, and I think we're more comfortable with who we are as artists and as people, and because of that, it doesn't bother me so much to do something a little bit more commercial that's not as highbrow as I used to think that that's only the stuff I wanted to do. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's fun. I've danced in street festivals. I've done flash mobs at a bloggers convention
right.
one time.
That's so funny.
And they were fun performances. They weren't, you know, groundbreaking. They weren't revolutionary ideas, but they were fun. And so my old, like when I was younger, that very specific, I'm only gonna do modern dance
right
on the stage has sort of lifted, because it's unrealistic to think that in these changing times, in these evolving times, that, you know, that right. that's all I could do to get, like, I no it's, one's gonna pay to see that.
Right. It's like, so true. We were
enough, I should say. People still go see it, but
right, not right. Enough. But a career. We're talking full-time
career.
Yeah,
full-time career.
We definitely thought we were gonna change the world with our art back in the day. And, you know, maybe we'll still do that. But if we're gonna eat and we're gonna pay our mortgage and our car and anything else, you know, if we're gonna do all these things into the future, like we hope to, then I've got to do stuff that plays to my audience right now. And I don't have that audience of people who will pay to see whatever I do. I don't have that. I have an audience of people who need entertainment, and that's what I'm there for. And so that's the show I'm working on. And it's a fine line between, I don't want to pander. I don't want to just do stuff that doesn't let me sleep at night because I don't feel fulfilled artistically. And I also want to do stuff that makes people happy and entertained. So I'm kind of towing that and figuring it out. And it, you know, that's a struggle of an artist, just like the get started thing we said earlier. All these things are daily struggles for you and for myself. And I know our listeners probably have the same thing. And
sure,
you know, we aren't the only ones. Professional, like big name artists, dancers, choreographers, painters, photographers, whoever, all struggle with this.
They're still having to meet certain requirements.
Yeah.
Whether they're a choreographer who's been hired to do a piece and they have to use however many, like everyone's going to have limits,
right,
limitations put on them, requirements, budgetary, whatever, that you have to compromise your vision. And I used to frown upon that idea, I guess, sort of a night when I was younger, more naive, sort of would, you know, I just want to, you know, I think we used to say something along the lines of like, we wanted to make stuff and we wanted to make it so good that people just liked it, that you were going to make them like whatever you did, 'cause you did so well at that thing. And the reality is that there will always be compromises of some kind that that we have to make,
right,
in order to have a, you know, people do their, but the people who do just whatever they want oftentimes are doing it as a hobby while they have another job supporting them, and that's fine too. That's
right.
If you just want to do your art and you don't care if anybody likes it, or if only 1,000 people like it or 10 people like it, you're probably doing it as a hobby instead of a full-fledged.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with any of that.
Wrong,
but
yeah, it's nothing wrong. Just know, but you should know it.
But a lot of our ideals are that you can do art full-time. And, mm-hmm, you know, I don't know if I hit this because I want to prove to my family or prove to someone else or prove to myself that I can do that. But that's been what I've wanted to do forever, and that's where this project came from.
I think for me, it's just that I don't know where else I'd fit.
I don't have any other skills, Stephanie.
I don't really either. I don't have the ability. Like, I'm taking my leadership class right now, where we talk a lot, and they talk a lot about, like, corporate life and how to be leaders in a group setting and what you have to do and this and that, and the idea of having to work in an office it's excruciatingly painful for me to even think about it. And that's not to say that there's anything wrong with it, because, like, for instance, my mom said that all she wanted when she was little was to grow up and work in an office. And that blows my mind, but it just shows, like, it's just not in me.
Right.
I just can't do it. Physically cannot do it.
Some people work to live. Like they just hit you a job so they can live on the weekends. And some people live to work. But honestly, I think when you're doing what you love, it's not work. So I'm living to do my passion. You know, like my work is this weekend. I have two shows, I think, Friday, Saturday, and the evenings. Fantastic. You know, that's when all the people in an office job are out at a bar or a restaurant, and that's their life. But to me, that's when I feel most alive, is on stage, and it just happens to be my job too.
Yeah.
I found a quote that goes with everything we're talking about today, and I'll be sure to share it online. But it's by Wallace Stevens, and it says, "It is necessary to any originality to have the courage to be an amateur."
Right.
And I love that, because you kind of have to have the confidence in yourself to just be a beginner, like we talked about with your photography, or like,
right,
I'm saying with my show, like I have to have the courage to start with new material and know it's going to be bad on stage for a while, but have faith in my abilities to pull it off in front of an audience eventually, and know that it's a necessary part of having a good show one day. And it's hard.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that goes back to discussions we've had on previous episodes too, the bad before good,
right,
idea, and how hard that is as an adult to decide that you're going to be bad before you're good.
Right.
So
it's been a goal to have an original show. We have all these goals all the time, and changing the subject slightly to that. I just think it's interesting, 'cause we went out on a nice walk earlier this, mm-hmm, morning, and we're enjoying the warm spring weather that we hope, fingers crossed, lasts for a while. And you told me something interesting. And I should say, I pointed out your Blizzard photo here on the wall. We made this really cool Instagram wall, yeah, meaning we'll we printed to... off, we'll Instagram a picture.
Yeah, we'll Instagram our Instagram
great
wall.
Great idea. Basically, Stephanie had this idea. Why don't we, you know, get our Instagram, some of our favorite Instagram photos off. So the Blizzard's on there, some Chicago ones, our cats, of course, all these exciting things. And it's a way of showcasing our own original artwork from Instagram on the wall of our office. And then we can rotate it in and out as we have more things and more memories from those photos. But anyway, it's looking really great. And we just got more frames and are going to finish it off hopefully today or tomorrow. But we were on the walk and Stephanie says, I was on Pinterest last night looking through my things and I saw that I had saved do an Instagram wall, make an Instagram wall and yeah, a guide to it or something.
Picture, it was a picture of somebody's sort of Instagram grid. And I had put it in like projects to do, projects that I want to do, whatever, and I had forgotten about it.
I love when you make a goal and you write it down or bookmark it or something, and then you just forget about it and it's there. And then you achieve it, and then months later you see it and you're like, I wanted to do that. I did it. And then I have the evidence of that transpiring. That's just such a great thing.
And that is, yeah, that's the reason that I write down all of my, people don't like to do, I feel like people don't like to do New Year's resolutions. And then there's all those articles that are like, you fail at your New Year's resolutions and blah, blah, blah. But I write all those goals down and it's not like I have to do this year or I have to accomplish all of these things exactly the way I've written them. But it's more like the more that I write things down, the more that I acknowledge that they're sort of goals and I work towards it, I end up accomplishing them eventually. Sometimes it takes me 3 years, sometimes 5 years. Sometimes I get them done in the first couple of months, but I do eventually knock them off my goal list. So I keep writing them every New Year, and then several times throughout the year.
Right.
I have various goals and things that I'm trying to accomplish, and eventually I will get them done. So I don't like to look at goals as something that you write down and then that's bad because you're going to fail at them, and then you're going to have a reminder that you've failed at your goals or whatever.
Right. There's no timeline on a goal. Right. You know, it's just for you.
Even
and it's
New Year's resolutions. Sometimes it might take you a couple of years to get through them all, but...
I don't get the animosity of New Year's resolutions. Any excuse to write down goals is good by me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Seriously, I write down goals maybe every week, short-term, long-term.
You make them happen. And then I think the important thing is that it's not, you write them down, but then you kind of let go of them.
Yeah.
So that, and then you find your list one day and you realize that in the back of your mind, you were working towards this something and that you forgot you were even sort of working towards it. And then you could knock it off and it feels really good.
I don't remember the exact statistics, but it says, you know, 80-90% of people, you're that much more likely to achieve your goals if you write them down. And I think it's that action of like committing that is there. And it, like you said, it might take 5 years, but we have so many goals that we've accomplished that we wrote down and so many more left to fulfill that are still there.
They also evolve too, because some of the goals, for instance, when we were in college, I kind of was in a stage where I thought that I might open up a dance company still, and that my relationship with my dance career has evolved since I've graduated, and I am sort of at a point where I'm more interested in the idea of mixing my photographic and like videography, like sort of interests with dance and combining the two. But I remember when we were in college, I really wanted to do like a dance company that utilized stage illusions, like magic stage illusions in the dance pieces, as a way to combine your talents and mine. And we haven't done that. We wrote some ideas down, but we just were constantly have this flow of information and ideas going back and forth. And I don't think that the magic dance company, if that's what you want to call it, will happen necessarily, But now that same idea is something that I am currently pursuing through photography, and I'm writing down a list of ideas now.
It won't happen in its initial form.
Right.
But it's evolved, and it's the action of just throwing the idea out there and putting it down. You know, until you said that, I hadn't thought about that. But then I remembered all the ideas we talked about.
Right.
And now, you know, last night you were telling me, like, what if I take dance and photography, my new interest, and do it? And which is a great way, because dance isn't always solo unless you're just, you know, you're out there freelancing music videos or something, and you can kind of go solo and do a ton of projects on your own. Like, dance is often a group thing. But as photography, like, I don't know where it's going to take, but it seems like a great idea that you could utilize your full skill set and make some amazing art, and also dance that's so fleeting, vanishing, you can capture it in an image form. So you're gonna do something, you know, something combining all of these things into something that you didn't even know, what, 6 years ago when you wrote that down, or, right, or whenever it was.
Right.
That's really cool.
So I think that you hit it on the head in a much more concise manner than I did.
That never happens.
Yeah, that hardly ever happens.
I'm too verbose.
But that, you know, that to me is still an accomplishment of a goal or an idea, just because it's not taking the exact form that it was sort of invented, sure, with or first thought of.
It's the same with my show right now. I was trying to do magic, and then I tried to do magic and mind reading, then I went all the way to mind reading. And now I'm bringing back in some magic just to kind of give the show a dynamic. But it's still going to be a mind-reading show.
Right.
But I just had an idea for a good show, and it's evolved and changed from what I thought the show was going to be 10 years ago or 5 years ago. So that's good. Even Starving Artist Blog has evolved. We didn't know we were going to do a podcast or,
right,
be all over social media and things.
Well, that's, and just that how started, goals work. And even Starving Artist Blog started as a couple of different things. It started as sort of a way for artists to save money. That was our first initial Starving Artist Blog. It was like, here's how you can save money while you're living, trying, right, to
couponing, yeah, or something.
Cut some coupons, yeah, and stuff like that. And then I had another idea called Dance Resource, that,
which was kind of the SAB equivalent for dancers.
Yeah, for dancers. But I just found, like, I had a resources page and a whole, I had the whole thing. And I even built a website. But I just found that the content and having to deal with just the subject matter of dance,
a narrow focus,
was a little bit too narrow for me, and right, not as interesting. And you know, you can't do anything if it's not, you know, it's hard to keep anything up and schedule something and keep at it if it's not interesting to you.
I think until we started going to like variety nights and shows and seeing all like meeting people who did things outside of dance and magic or mind reading, we saw all these people and we were like, oh, like at Fringe Festival, you performed there and other places. We were like, oh, we could help that person. We know ideas, or they could help us. And we started thinking about artists helping artists. And when we open it outside of just what I do and just what you do into a broader range, that's when all of our ideas came together.
Yeah, they sort of crashed together into one, and now we have this. But it's been, you know, I don't count any of those other things as failures, just as these sort of pieces of the puzzle. And now we have successfully executed them and have something that we can both stand behind and be confident about.
I'm sure we could go and just draw a connecting line from 2010 to 2011 to 2012 of these various ideas and their evolution and to where we are today. And, you know, like Stephanie said earlier, if this podcast keeps going, we hope to be around for several years easily. And if we are, hopefully it'll be in a different iteration than it is even now. And right, it'll have evolved into something even better. And we don't know what that is, but we hope to let ourselves and your feedback kind of define it.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting. You have to just be like my show, like the project, you have to be ready to just kind of embrace it, get going,
and know that
it's going to change.
Know that it's going to change and be okay with it changing, and know that it's going to be good as a result. Like, yeah, if I had just stuck to I'm just going to do Dance Resource, nobody would know about it because it wouldn't be a fully formed idea.
Right.
Even though I had the website and I had a couple of blog posts and I was onto something and I knew that there was something there that was worth exploring, if I had stopped there, I don't think it would be as good. I just don't think it would be as good.
I think you summed that up really well. It's interesting because I was bringing up your photo equipment, frames or something, and something happened to me that tied into a blog post I wrote recently. And I thought I would mention it because of that and tell that brief story. I think you remember what I'm talking about because I was in the package room downstairs getting, it was your photo equipment, bringing it up. And this lady says, getting on the elevator, had some packages too. She says, oh, photography equipment. I said, yes, my wife's a photographer. She's starting to take more photos and been getting into it more and more recently. And she says, oh, I'm a photographer too. And I was like, oh, great. What kind of photography do you do? And she very smugly said, celebrity. And then I said, oh, neat. And I was very, like, I always try to be very friendly and over the top friendly because I don't want anyone to misinterpret my words to have any malice or anything. So I use exclamation points like crazy in emails and texts and all that because I don't want anyone to think I'm being rude or sarcastic or anything other than, you know, over the top nice. But this lady was so rude and so arrogant, and she was saying, well, don't do this, and you don't want to do that, and I get flown around the world to do this. It's like, if I or you, Stephanie, got flown around the world to do something, which is my dream, and, you know, you're coming with me if that happens, and I'll go with you if it happens to you, I wouldn't rub it in someone's face like the way she did, and I wouldn't be rude. I would just, you know, I don't have to say anything. I don't have to tell someone I do that at that point.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of a post, and you can find it on the blog. It's called Be Nice to Everyone, because several years ago I was in L.A. sleeping on couches. I went to the Magic Castle. I won a contest, got a free ticket to the Magic Castle. And I was in the Magic Castle, and I'm kind of staying there. And I don't really have but a couple friends in L.A. at the time. I looked across the way, and I saw this man who I recognized. And this man was the author of the first magic book, which is right behind me on my shelf in my office. I still have it, that I ever owned. And this book paved my way to where I am now. I studied it religiously. I taught myself to read from it. It came with props. It was an obsession growing up. It's got little drawings and all kind of crap in it from growing up. And I was like, I've got to go over and say hi to this guy. I've got to go over and say, you know, like, thank you. Thank you so much. I didn't want to interrupt. I didn't want a photo. I didn't want a signature. I just wanted to say thank you. It means the world to me because I don't know what else to do in my life. And it's because of your book that I do what I do. And I waited for like a lapse in his conversation. Very, you know, went over very politely over the top like I did with this lady downstairs. And he just dismissed me. He just said, we're busy, and dismissed me. And that was like, that just broke my heart. It was the worst thing ever. And I just think that there's a point you reach in your career where you have to be nice to everyone, and it's probably the first day of your career. That's what I think. Like, you need to be nice to everyone all the time. You don't know who you're talking to. You don't know who matters. But I blew my mind, and I'll never. I look at that man differently. I see the book, and I think of that experience shaped that. You know, if we see that lady again, I don't care if she is millionaire photographer, celebrity photographer, like, she was rude in our initial encounter, and that shapes my opinion of her. And that's, I don't know, it's a really, really hard story to think about, but it's a post on the blog and something that happened this week that kind of sparked that again in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that drives you crazy because people are just so rude. Yeah,
well, you know, I don't like anyone who feels the need to volunteer what they do and then tell you all about it without being asked.
And is rude, unsolicited free advice where she's just saying things because she knows them and rubbing it in. Not because, like, I asked.
I can often tell, it reminds me, that I can often tell when a young girl is a dancer. Just by the way they stand, whether maybe they're tap dancing in line with their mom, and it reminds me of being young, and I know what they're doing. I know that they're a dancer, but I don't feel, I just don't feel the need to be like, I'm a dancer and you're doing this wrong, or I've toured the country or whatever. Like, I just, there's no point in say, I look at them. I'm fond of what they do. I think it's great. I can relate to them. But unless asked, I don't usually just volunteer information. And I also don't think that if you're actually a celebrity photographer, you probably don't need to say it. That's right. Sort That's of something how I that feel bothered too. Me it's too. Like if you're touring the country and you're a professional, you typically just are. And you don't have to I always go used around to say, saying it to everyone.
Right, right. I always used to say when we were trying to figure out how to brand myself, we'd look at other people's websites to get an idea, and they'd say, like, professional illusionist and all this. And I'd say, well, no one who's professional says they're a professional. They just are. Right. They're a magician. They're an architect. No one says professional doctor. They're just a doctor, you know. Yeah. So that's a good point. That blew my mind.
Right.
That she did that.
And I think that just people in general and whatever the career is sometimes feel the need to I'm knowledgeable on this subject.
Right.
And, you know, instead of just being kind.
Yeah.
And keeping your mouth shut. And she, you know, if she was a photographer and interested, she could have just asked, "Got some new stuff? That's awesome. I always get excited when I get new gear."
The best thing is just to ask questions of other people when I take some pictures, and it's not like I don't have to know what she does, but just ask questions of other people. The best joke that Stephanie made right away, she just said, she said, "I doubt she's a celebrity photographer because why would she be living in this building?" And that killed me. That's so perfect.
I mean, there's anything wrong with our building, but if someone's flying you around the world to photograph celebrities, I don't know if you're going to be our neighbor.
Right. She could go miles south of us.
Yeah, you might be a mile down the road.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, but that was a perfect
downtown Chicago.
That was a perfect joke because we've got people renting across the hall from us who throw loud parties. You know, like, this is not the building you would think to have a celebrity photographer. I'm sorry, a professional celebrity photographer. Yeah. anyway, be nice to everyone. We try to be. If we run into anyone, we want to hear all about what you do, and we're not going to rub it in your face that we know more because we don't claim to. We're just doing our thing and hopefully helping you.
Yeah.
We're so inspired. Like, everyone tweets us pictures of their art they're working on, their paintings, like,
gosh, it's so links cool, to things. Isn't it?
It's so amazing. That's why Twitter and Facebook and even Instagram are so fun, because it's just community. I'm not in this with Stephanie to advertise our respective artistic pursuits.
Right.
We're not here to show you what we do and ask for money. We're here simply to encourage you, inspire you, and be encouraged and inspired by you. And you guys do that every week. I'm blown away. Yeah.
It's always exciting to see people tweeting to us and then going, and we go and look at people who tweet to us. We look at their websites and, you know, look at their cool whatever drawings or pictures or paintings or whatever. And it's so neat. And it really, the whole goal is a community. So we love to see what everyone's doing.
Keep them coming.
So keep it coming. And
yeah, I would also add that we were on a recent episode of the Spark and the Art podcast by our friend Sean Tucker up in Canada. And we had a nice conversation with him. It was nice to kind of be the interviewee instead of kind of this just the ones kind of going off each other, but he asked us some really insightful questions about mind reading, dance, art, Starving Artist blog, and all these things. So if you want kind of a different perspective of what we did, be sure to listen to that episode. I linked to it on Twitter and our website, starvingartistblog.com. and if you want us to cover anything, send us an email at info@starvingartistblog.com or tweet to us at @sartsblog. And we would love for your ideas. Yeah,
we want to hear from you. So
yeah, we'll write a post or share some helpful articles and hopefully keep encouraging and inspiring you along the way. I think that's going to do it for this week. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next week. That was the Starving Artist Blog podcast. If you enjoyed it, be sure to subscribe on iTunes.
Also, head over to starvingartistsblog.com where we share more inspiration and ideas for you.
Want to join the conversation? Email questions and feedback to info@starvingartistblog.com. Thanks for listening.